I want to welcome all of you to From My Kitchen Table. For those of you who do not know me, I am Joe Packham, and I am so thankful that you are joining me today. This is a brand new podcast. Our podcasts will be coming to you every week, so please visit the website and listen, because the guests we have are amazing. They have so much to teach, so much to share, so much to give to all of us. I have such a special guest for you. She is amazing, and she's good people. She's our people. She's part of our community. We have not been friends for a very long time, but it was one of those situations where the first time I was introduced to our guest today, I think she is going to be a mentor of mine for a very long time. Today's guest is an artist, an author, a founder of the top-ranked Inspiration Place podcast, which is listened to by thousands of artists around the world. After witnessing 9/11, she abandoned a lucrative hedge fund career to become a full-time working artist. Since then, our guest and her art have been featured in major publications, including Forbes, The New York Times, Art of Man, Professional Artist Magazine, and Art Journaling Magazine. Her artwork has also been featured on NBC's Parenthood and the Amazon series Hunters with Al Pacino. Her forthcoming book with HarperCollins Leadership on How to Make It as an Artist is scheduled to be released in October of 2022. Through her signature artist incubator coaching program, she helps other artists learn business skills so that they can create more time and freedom to do what they love. Please welcome, and know that it is such an honor for me to introduce you to artist Miriam Shulman. Miriam, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It is such an honor. And just so you know, I screw up my intros all the time. Today, I introduced an artist whose name is Esty as Etsy. It's like, please welcome Etsy to the show. I was so mortified.
Well, that makes me feel 100% better. But what I do know is that we have a great editor on our team. So he takes out right. All of those, right?
So yes.
I have to do everything I can to appear to be just a tiny bit as professional as you are. Tell my audience all about you.
I mean, thank you for that beautiful introduction. I'm a watercolor artist. I specialize in portraits, and I focus mostly on helping other artists either learn those skills that have brought me to where I am now, either those art skills or the business skills. So that is what I'm very passionate about, helping other artists make a living from their artwork.
And it's so important, because I know a lot of our audience is passionate about their art and they're devoted to it, but they're not as good at business as they are at their art, because it's really difficult. One story I have is this. I bought an art piece from this woman, and it had these buttons on it. And she said, "Don't you just love those buttons?" And I said, "Yes, I love those buttons." And she said, "It took me 3 days solid shopping to find them." It's just so important. The details are so important. It has nothing to do with the time and the money, right? So they can use your skills and your knowledge and your information. So I do hope that all of our artists will tune in to your classes. Your website is fabulous, by the way. I mean, your classes and your website and your podcasts, it's amazing. It's something that I aspire to. Is that the right word? I want to be like you when I grow up. Miriam, will you tell our audience why you paint and what your process is? I mean, what led you to be an artist?
Those are such good questions. So a lot of people are afraid of watercolor, especially for portraits, because they feel that they can't make a mistake. What I love about it is because once it's down there, I don't feel the need to go back and fuss with it. The way acrylic or oil paints, you can always fix something. And I love the spontaneity that watercolor gives me, that I can give like that nice sheer look to convey skin tones. And mostly though, I was drawn to painting in watercolor rather than other mediums because it was the easiest one to clean up. And I really don't enjoy cleaning my brushes. So in fact, when I do paint in other mediums like acrylic, I will just buy the cheapest brushes I can from Michael so I can throw them out when I'm done, so I don't have to clean them.
And I noticed on your website that you actually have a free booklet, right? About all the artist supplies, which talks about the right kind of watercolors. Am I correct?
Yes. So if you want to get started in watercolor painting, I do have a free supply list. And people who maybe already are painting watercolors, artists are always very curious about what the color palettes are that other artists are using. And so if you open up like any painting magazine, they will give, these are the list of colors and these are the brands. So you can get that from me for free if you go to shulmanart.com/supplies. That is my complete list of watercolor supplies. And there may be some things on that list that will surprise you. So there's a few things on there, like a Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. You might be able to guess what that's for.
I went over that. I saw that.
And if you're listening to this podcast when it first goes live, there is a free portrait video series so that you can explore the techniques that you need to get started.
Isn't it true that portraits are the most difficult to paint?
I have a little way of cheating, which I, you know, it's called the taboo technique that a lot of portrait artists use that they really don't like to talk about because some people might consider it cheating, but I do encourage artists to use it because a lot of great artists who did realistic portraiture, whether it was Vermeer or Norman Rockwell, they did rely very heavily on using photography or using, in Vermeer's day, it was camera obscura to help project the image that they want to paint onto either their paper or their canvas. So if those people who feel that they are drawing challenged, they should not be intimidated from doing portraiture because you actually don't need a lot of drawing skills to get a realistic likeness. And that makes it much more relaxing than to focus on just putting down the colors that give you pleasure because the drawing is going to do most of the heavy lifting for you.
I did not know that. See, I tell everybody that on our podcasts, they're going to learn lots of secrets. So there you go. There's your first secret. So when you started painting, did you start painting portraits or did you start painting something else?
That's a great question. So before I became, you know, professional, when I was in high school, I used to draw my teachers. So I had trouble focusing because I'm probably, you would diagnose me now as ADD. I don't think they called it that. They diagnosed girls who were spacey like me as ADD because we were very quiet and mind our own business. And we would just draw when we got distracted or bored. So I used to draw my teachers. And so that's how I really got started developing those skills of studying people and drawing their likenesses. And it was something I continued to do on the side. When I was in college, I wasn't an art major. I did study art history, but I wasn't a visual arts major or painting. I didn't go to an art school, but I did do a lots of life drawing classes along the way. So when I had children, it was natural that I would want to draw and paint them. That is really what launched my career as a professional artist, was when I was offering portraits on commission to people in my community when they saw the portraits I was doing of my children.
So were you intimidated when you started offering to do commission work for everyone? Portraits are so personal, right? What if they didn't like it? I mean, what would you do? Would you do it again? Would you sell it to them anyway? I mean, how do you handle a personal situation like that?
That's a great question. And I always guaranteed that they were going to like the painting and that I would work on it until they felt it captured their subject. Usually it was children that I was painting. Sometimes it could be a pet or something else. What I did was make sure that they were involved in the process along the way. When they are involved in the process, it relaxes their anxiety. Usually they weren't worried about me coming up with a likeness because when they look at my portfolio, they could see both the photos of other people I've painted as well, the photos of the person as well as the photo of the artwork. So they could see that, yes, not only do I paint people well, but I actually paint who it is I'm trying to paint.
Good, good, because that doesn't always happen. You know, I had portraits painted from pictures of my mom and dad. And when I received them, I was horrified and they were expensive. And so it was a very uncomfortable situation. So
that is not surprising. One thing that I tell my clients is that's why I like to photograph children myself. It gives me an opportunity to study them. When you're working just with a photo, and this is why doing online portraits, I don't mean taking an online class, I mean doing commissions of people online that you've never seen in person, you can copy a photo exactly. You know, we all have bad pictures of ourselves. I say that, not that somebody's handing you a bad picture, but when you have a bad picture, little things can alter someone's appearance. And if you're not sure what it is that really that person looks like, you can tend to either overemphasize or underemphasize something that's in the photo that really isn't capturing how the person looks in life. Like if they just happen to have their chin a little bit too downward, it might appear in the photo that they have a double chin or that they are heavier than they really are in real life. So what would happen when I was doing portraits, even when I was taking the photos myself, I told them that occasionally I can capture in through my painting the photograph exactly. But if they felt the photo didn't represent the child, then I would invite the child into my studio for a touch-up where I would have the person in front of me while I was finishing the painting. And it's amazing how just a few little touches would completely change the painting without having to do a drastic overhaul. And it's just those little things I was talking about, like maybe, oh, wait, I just need to adjust the cheek just ever so much and things shift. Then it's like, that's the person in front of you.
You know, Miriam, I'm so impressed with you because your paintings are beautiful. I mean, I've never seen them in person, but I see them in your studio and I see them online, right? And they're gorgeous. And your sense of compassion and working with people and making sure there's nothing more important to a mother than a picture of her child, right? So right. The way that you approach the entire situation and then work through it with them and then guarantee them, it's just compassionate and genius, actually. Not all artists do that, you know. I believe that anyone can learn how to draw, but I do also believe that you have a propensity towards it. And so you obviously have a propensity towards drawing and watercolor. Do you have that same propensity towards business? And do you like the business side of selling art as much as you do the painting side of art?
I think you know what the answer is. Yes, I do. I really do. Yes, I really do. I love all of it. And a big thing that's very important to me, Joe, that is why I teach art classes and even why I do the paintings. A big thing that's been very important to me is legacy. So when I create a portrait, I'm creating a legacy that is for my client, that they are having an heirloom that's going to go in their home, that is going to be within the family after they're gone, after I'm gone, even after that child is gone. So I'm creating a legacy. When I'm teaching an art class, that is also really my why that's driving me forward is I'm teaching my students skills that I have, so I'm not taking it with me. And I feel the same way when I'm teaching those business skills, that I'm really helping artists learn the skills that I have to make it as an artist, which is why I'm writing the book as well, because I think there's such a misconception that you have to be famous, you have to have 100,000 fans, you have to get into a gallery, you have to do all these things to make it as an artist. And I know that isn't true. I really am passionate about giving artists the legacy to make if they want to, because I know not everybody wants to make a career out of it, but those who want to show them how and give them those skills and pass that legacy on to others. So that's really the theme that drives me through all those things that I do.
And everything's so intertwined. I know you're very good at podcasts. The way I met Miriam is that she invited me to be on her podcast, and as you've heard me say many times, I am not a fan of podcasts, but I'm learning. I think Miriam is to be credited with my new passion for podcasts because she made it so easy and so much fun. And so when you interview other women, I want you to paint my kids as pictures, right? And so is that one way that you find some of your new clients is through your guests on your podcast, because it seems so tied together. It seems so woven.
Usually my portrait commissions come from word of mouth, because when you put those portraits out into the world, they become your ambassadors.
Oh, of course.
My career was at its peak with the portrait commission when my kids were young, because I had a constant flow of clients, potential clients coming to the house for play dates with their parents. And I strategically put some of those portraits right in the hallway where they could see them. When those portraits that I do for other people go into their homes, those become the ambassador. So the greatest way for me to get new clients have been nurturing the relationships with the clients I already have.
Oh, that's nice. And it's part of your legacy. You know, it's part of the community that you're involved in, because everybody commissions you and they all love you and they love the work you do. So tell me about what led you to podcasting.
Yes. Okay. So I started writing articles for Professional Artist Magazine. I don't know if you remember that publication. I don't think they're not around anymore. It was so fun to have the reconnaissance, which maybe you enjoy this as well, Joe, when you have artists in your magazine that you can, as the journalist, you can ask them whatever you want and find out the answer. And I found that so fun that after a few months of writing the articles for the magazine and interviewing other articles, I really wanted to take it to the podcasting medium. It's been a lot of fun for me. So I really enjoy curating the experience, like finding unusual guests that maybe is outside of what my audience is used to listening to, bringing people in from the business world and explaining how the business principles work for artists, because often there is a disconnect and it's not the artist's fault. It's because the way it's explained that I think artists are left out of that conversation. So a marketer might say, in order to get someone to sign up for your email list, you need to give them a cheat sheet. Well, that makes no sense if you're an artist. You know, what's a cheat sheet? Like what is that? What do I do? I take a lot of pleasure in kind of being that curator / translator from marrying these two different worlds and have it make sense for the art community.
Well, and I do think that's really important, because I do think the business side of the brain and the art side of the brain are two very different sides of the brain. And some people work with both of them beautifully and some just don't. I mean, it's like me and technology. It doesn't matter how hard I try, I cannot make it work. We all have what we're good at. And what you have mastered is being good at lots of different things that aren't necessarily in the same genre. I think writing and painting are the same. I think that's the same skill set. But I think podcasting and business are the same, but they're totally separate skill sets. So it's encouraging to our audience to know that you can do both if you practice, right?
Yeah, I think the key word there and all the things you just said, Joe, was skill set. And I really think with both art, business, all the things we're just talking about, let's just say you wanted to learn tennis. There's a certain set of skills you have to learn and you have to practice and keep working on and have instruction on those skills in order to get better and master that game. And that is true of all the things that you just said. There's a certain skill set you need to learn and you need a coach or a teacher to get you there. It's just not reasonable to hand somebody a racket and say, go play tennis if they've never done it before. And it's the same thing with business. So I can't just say, hey, do this business stuff if you've never done it before. You have to learn all the skills and you need a coach or a teacher or a guide to show you how to do it and to make sure you're understanding, you know, how to hold the racket, how to swing the ball. Oh, wait, you're not quite doing this right. I showed you, but you're still not quite getting it because you have to fix this thing. And that's where having a mentor, teacher, coach to learn all these things that we're talking about, not just business, but art skills as well, they are skills.
That is a very nice way to put it, because it makes it seem achievable and not too far out in the distance. I took Betty Edwards' class 25 years ago, drawing on the right side of your brain. And hers is the same basic theory, right? You can learn how to do anything if you learn the five basic steps and practice, practice, practice. And that's what it takes to develop a skill set, is to practice, practice, practice. The difficult part of that is if you don't like numbers and you don't like business, it's really hard to practice, 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 because you'd rather be painting. Right.
Well, you know what it is also, Joe, is that when you're new to something, you're not going to be good at it and it's not going to be fun. So that is like the whole tiger mother approach, is that tiger mothers know that they have to force their kids to do it until they get good, because it doesn't get fun until you're good at it.
That's a nice statement. I might put that on the bottom of your interview, because I think that's so true. And we don't think that through sometimes. So tell me, just because I'm so interested in, tell me about your book, because I used to be in publishing books. Everybody wants to write a book, right? Everybody wants to be an author. So tell them a little bit about what that really looks like.
Yeah, writing books is hard. Can we just agree that? It's kind of like when I have two children now, but when I had my first child, I says, wow, childbirth is hard. You know, my sister was like, what did you think it was going to be? You know, it's like, you know, people tell you, but you don't believe them.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, I'm going to be different. Isn't that what you always think? It'll be different with me.
Yeah. And it's not that I thought, yeah, I don't know. You just don't think, I don't know. You just don't realize that. Yeah. No, it's really hard. Yeah. I'm working on it. I'm on chapter 5 or 6. I have a deadline with the publisher in December, and so I decided to write a book last year, and then the beginning of this year, I decided that I wanted to work on getting the publishing contract. I think it was because I was having so much resistance in actually finishing the book that I just changed my goal to get a publishing contract. For whatever reason, that seemed like a better goal for me. And I guess because it's more business oriented.
Right. And that's one question I get asked really a lot, is how do you get a publishing contract? How do you actively search that out?
Yeah. How much time do you have? You want to hear? I will tell you. When you're writing a nonfiction book, a nonfiction is either a memoir or an art book, how to paint something, or what I'm writing, which is a business book. When you're writing a nonfiction book, what they actually want from you, the publishers, that is not a completed book. They want from you what's called a book proposal, which is basically a pitch document. It's a document that pitches you your idea and why you're the person that should write it. So those were all skills that actually I've developed over the years. I did get some help from somebody who knows how to write proposals, but those are all skills that I know how to sell who I am, why I do it, and why I'm the person to teach you, because that's how I sell my art classes. I'm always doing that. I'm always selling myself, this is what you're going to learn. This is why I'm the person to teach you these things. And this is why it's needed. The other thing publishers are looking for is, why is this actually needed? So that was the piece I think that was the most challenging, is I had to look at what are the other books that are similar to the book that I'm writing and how mine is going to be different than what's already there. You don't want it to be exactly what's already there, because otherwise they don't need your book. And you don't want it to be so different than what's already there, because showing that there's a demand for your topic shows that people will buy it. And that is really what publishers are doing at the end of the day, is they're making a purchasing decision to buy your book and selling it to other people. And that's what they want to know. Who are these people that we're selling this book to? So if you can show them that there are lots of people like your readers, Joe.
Yes.
If you can show them how big that market is, and you can back that up and show them why you're the person to write this book, that is what they're looking for. And then the process was, first I had to convince an agent that this was a good idea. And then my agent took my idea to her contacts in the publishing industry and sold my idea to them.
Well, congratulations. I get lots of questions about that. I've always wondered, because I was, in my early career, I was the one who made the selections for the authors. And it was amazing to me how many women wanted to write a book and were so unprepared to write a book. They didn't write a good proposal. They didn't do their homework. They didn't do all of those things. And in those days, that was so long ago that we didn't really use a lot of agents in the art industry. Mostly fiction had agents, and exercise books were big in those days when I was part of that. So it's nice for you to tell the women that are listening to you all about all the different things you do. I cannot encourage everyone who's listening enough to visit Miriam's site, take some time and listen to her podcasts and look at her classes and take a class and buy her book when it's published, because she has so much to share. I appreciate you so very much. I'm going to be your new best friend because I need you in my life. And that's what's so nice about this community, is that when you find somebody who can help you and teach you and is gracious and kind and giving and funny at the same time, it's the perfect storm. And so you will be able to find on our website the links to Miriam's website and all the things she does. And Miriam, you know, here's a little secret about me. I have always been in business by myself. And so I've always used the term we, always in everything I do. I say we, and that's because if somebody doesn't like the idea or starts to criticize it, I can blame somebody else. And so I don't have to take all the responsibility myself, right? So I always say, when we do this, when we do that, but it really is me, but I'm not brave enough to stand up for myself sometimes. So what I have decided to do on my podcast is to ask each guest the same two questions. These two questions tell a lot about the heart of a person. So my first question for you is, what secret will you tell our audience that no one else knows?
It was hard for me to come up with something because I have a podcast that I've been doing for 3 years. There's not a lot of stories left. So I was a cheerleader for basketball in the 9th grade. I was not popular with the other cheerleaders because I kept falling off the pyramid. They stuck me like in the front of, because I could do a split. I think that's how I got the job to be a cheerleader. That, and there weren't a lot of people trying out that year. So yeah, that's my story and I'm going with it.
That's perfect, right? And it's at the moment, it's the most embarrassing point of your entire life, right? When you're doing something and everybody's doing it better than you are. I think it takes bravery to admit it later on. I like that.
It wasn't that I was worried about people doing it better than me. I was worried about disappointing people. Like if I fell off, it was like, oh, because of Miriam, she ruined it. You know, that was the part. And I think that's still something about myself that I worry about. I always worry about disappointing other people. Like I wanted to live up to the expectations of what I hope other people want.
Well, I do think you're standing on top of your pyramids these days. So congratulations. And my other question is, what is your favorite quote? I think this tells more about someone than almost anything.
I love quotes. It's kind of like asking, what's your favorite ice cream flavor? So my favorite ice cream flavor today. but this actually is one of my favorite quotes is by Oscar Wilde. And it's, be yourself because everyone else is already taken.
I love that too. It's so true and so poignant. And that's why I love quotes, because some people can say something in so few words. That's why I love greeting cards, because greeting cards sometimes can really say in 5 or 6 words everything you need to say, right? So I would like to thank you. Is there anything else that you would like to tell my audience before we go?
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. So if you liked what I had to say here today, I would love to invite you to listen to the Inspiration Place podcast. It's free. And you can find it on Apple Podcasts. And be sure you check out the interview that I did of our own Joe, because she was such a lovely guest.
Well, and like I said in the last podcast, for those of you who aren't listening, please go on and rate the podcast. Now, I didn't know that was important. I had to learn that. And what I have learned is it's not about rating the podcasts for me or Miriam so that we'll have the greatest podcast ever. It is to help all of those who she interviews and who are not familiar to our audience. If we go on and listen to them and re-rate them, then we can help each other exponentially. You're helping yourself. because you're learning something, you're helping Miriam because she is trying to promote other people, and you're helping the people that she's promoting. In the one case is me. So that is the magazines, and that is all of the women that I feature in the magazines. So by helping each other and going on and rating the podcast, you really are helping in a major way. And it's just such an easy thing to do. So please do that for Miriam, and please do that for all of us and yourself. And Miriam, I can't thank you enough for everything you've done for me. I do hope that we get to be good friends, and someday I can, when COVID is over, we can meet and drink wine, and you can teach me how to watercolor, right?
I'll take you to a museum. How about that in New York?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that'll work. I would like to end the podcast by thanking you all for coming and being part of what we love so much to do, and ending with one of my favorite quotes, which is, I love you all with 1,000 hearts.